Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A pretty busy week in the world of professional wrestling. And let's start with the big news that AEW is indeed moving from TNT to TBS next year. Now, this announcement came as they also announced that there'll be an additional show called Rampage starting second Friday in August. And that will be on TNT until they move, and then that will also be on TBS. Now, initially, I had reported that TBS reaches less households than TNT. That turns out not to be true. However, it's selective in a way. In other words, overall, yes, TBS reaches more people, more households. However, it depends state to state. So in some areas where TBS will actually be more prevalent, and then there's going to be some areas where they're going to be a little less prevalent. So it really depends on the state you live in, which one is more prevalent. In other words, here in New York, I think it's about even. I think it reaches about the same amount of households. But in certain areas, certain states, TNT reaches a little more. Certain states, TBS reaches a little more. But overall, TBS actually reaches more. But it's regional, so I'm not sure how well that's going to play out. This is because, of course, of the hockey situation. Now, they can say all they want. This is a huge upgrade, and this is the next step in building our brand. It's going to be better. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. Why didn't they put you on TBS to begin with then? TBS really doesn't have a ton of lead-in type shows. In other words, you're pretty much going to have to be that AEW fan saying, I'm going to tune into this station, because there's nothing to lead you into it. In other words, you're not just going to be a TBS viewer and saying, oh, wrestling is on. So that's probably not going to happen. I don't know if that's much of a concern for AEW. We'll see how they do in the ratings when the time comes. Now, as far as adding the third hour, it's not really a third hour more than it is another show that happens to be an hour. As far as adding that other show that's an hour-long show, Rampage, and putting it on directly after SmackDown, I guess we'll wait and see. I guess we'll wait and see how that flies with fans. If you've watched 2 hours of SmackDown and you're a really, really, really hardcore fan, you might want to flip over and watch another hour of wrestling, this one being AEW, or maybe you're wrestled out and you say, I'm done for the night. We'll see how it works out. But it is big news for several reasons. One being, because they reach more households overall, and again, it's regional, so it depends on where you live, but overall they reach more households, they're going to be expected to do more. They're going to be expected to do more. Now, what I do want to say is this. This week's AEW ratings were in the mid-800,000s, which was a drop, over 100-and-some-odd-thousand drop from last week. And it's blamed on the basketball playoffs, but I'm getting sick of everything being blamed on something else. If wrestling is a strong show, if wrestling is an appealing pop culture show that these top stations are bidding on because they draw so many people, how come they're so easily distracted from? Joe Biden's given a speech. Well, then the ratings will be terrible. the basketball playoffs, all then the ratings will be terrible. You mean to tell me wrestling's not equal to any of that? That is a Westminster dog show. The ratings will be terrible.
What?
Well, then I don't know. I remember a time when Monday Night Football was crap in the bed, thanks to Monday Night Raw. That's how popular wrestling was. Now, apparently, if there's a rerun, a popular rerun of some 80s sitcom on television, well, that's the reason. That's the reason we didn't draw. I'm tired of that excuse. Basketball is seeing its lowest ratings in its history. Mostly thanks to political crapola. And if wrestling can't pull itself by its bootstraps and hold equal to presidential speeches and basketball playoffs and reruns of Gilligan's Island, then I don't know what to tell you. We'll see if they rebound next week. And, of course, we'll see if a third hour helps or hurts them. Because as it stands now, our schedule looks something like this. Monday, we have Monday Night Raw. Tuesday, we have NXT. Wednesday, we have AEW. Thursday, we have Impact. Friday, we have SmackDown, and now apparently AEW again. And Sunday are often pay-per-views, and sometimes Saturday, depending on what company's running them. So virtually, you're looking at almost 7 days a week. Because if you watch any other company, if you watch some of the indies or you know, whatever, then, you know, you could be 7 days a week watching wrestling every single day or night of your life. That's a lot. That's a lot. Now, one hour program will obviously be very streamlined. Probably two matches tops. Three at the outset, and that's if they're short and there's not much lead-in. So I don't know. I don't know, Mike, about adding another program. What's your thoughts about AEW adding a second program?
I don't know if it's going to work either. And look, I remember back in the day when Superstars and there was a few other WWE programs that were one-hour programs, and you know, you basically had, you're right, you only had maybe one or two matches, and then if they decided to do a skit or a backstage thing, you know, that would take up the whole hour or the 45, 50 minutes or whatever it is, depending on how many commercials they ran. So, yeah, I don't know if we're ready. Look, we're forgetting about SEW, SWE, you know, and what's the other one? NWA, you know.
Yep.
So
that's what I mean. So it's really flooded.
Those are your deals. And
so much to watch. It's absolutely insane. I mean, you know, sometimes you'd be watching two shows a day. It gets to the point where nobody could possibly ingest this much wrestling. And when that happens, and the market gets glutted with it, usually someone feels the heat. In other words, someone takes the fall. You're not going to have this many organizations thrive. You can't have 100 hours of wrestling on TV a week and have people say, well, I'm watching it all. No, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. So we'll see. We'll see how this comes down. But that's pretty big news. I mean, moving to TBS, in some ways, Todd, could be a good move for them in the sense that it reaches more people, but could be a bad move in the sense that it's more regional in reaching more people. And also, it's really a network known for, you know, reruns and stuff like that. It's not really TNT, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it could be a good thing or a bad thing for AEW. It could help them or hurt them to move to another network. Well, like you said, it depends on what the NBA or the NHL playoffs. You know, it depends on how it works for them.
And I remember Tony Khan saying that the TNT was totally committed to them and they weren't going to blow them off for hockey or whatever. Well, that didn't happen. That did not happen. So I'll be curious to see how things go come next year when they make the switch. How many, well, you know, your hardcore fans are going to follow you wherever. It's going to be the same time, I think, and the same day. And I'll also be curious to see how many people tune into the Friday show. Now, a one-hour wrestling format show is not a bad idea. It's pretty fast-paced. You can advertise it on your weekly show saying there's a special match. Now, TNT still is going to air AEW. They're going to air four specials a year. Presumably, these are going to be like the main shows. So they haven't totally given up the ghost when it comes to AEW, but only four specials a year, and that'll be probably on Saturdays. Anyway, WWE has went on a release rampage again, this time mostly NXT talent. And the three big names that really there is to talk about is Alexander Wolfe and Jasmine Duke and Velveteen Dream. Now, the Velveteen Dream news didn't come out until yesterday. The others came the day before. And I waited to announce the Velveteen Dream thing because I didn't buy it at first. He was backstage at Raw. It looked like he was about ready to make his main roster debut. And I really thought, nah, something, that's got to be a rumor. But no, it's true. He was released. Now, barring that this is some kind of a weird angle, which I doubt, something had to happen. Because this is too long after the incident that would have gotten him released. It's been months and months and months and months since the allegations against Velveteen Dream, which for the people who maybe do not know, apparently he was chatting online with some fans who turned out to be girls who were underage, just barely, like 17. And during the course of their chat, I guess if the allegations are true, he sent them a nude picture, which obviously is illegal. Now, here's the thing. I want proof. It's too late anyway. He's fired. But I would want proof of a few things if I were a wrestling federation. The first thing I would say is all my talent can shut up because your opinion does not matter. I own the business. I know who I need to hire. I know who I don't need to hire. I'll tell you who you're going to work with. Or you can go get your paycheck somewhere else. This isn't, you know, this isn't one thing where we have a locker room and we say, how many people vote for? That's not the way it works. Number two, show me the transcription of the chat in which these girls tell them that they are underage. I want to make sure that that happened. I want to make sure these girls did not say, well, I'm 24 years old. I'm 25 years old. Now, apparently it didn't happen because at some point in the chat, they said they go to school. Now, that should have been the red flag to the old Velveteen Dream that if you're going to school and they don't mean college, which you could clarify very easily, do you mean school or do you mean college, that they're obviously not of age. But I want to make sure, because once again, we aren't dealing with 12-year-olds, dealing with a girl who's 17. How do I know when her birthday is? Maybe her birthday was the day after she talked to the Velveteen Dream. I don't know. But I do know that given all of the information that they had, the prosecutors didn't think they had a case. Otherwise, he would be arrested. Simple as that. I promise you, and please don't do it, but I promise you if you send a picture of yourself and you're in your, I don't know how old Velveteen Dream is, mid to late 20s, and you send a picture of yourself to an underage girl and she reports it, you are going to be arrested. I promise you, you will be arrested. Velveteen Dream was not arrested. So that means that the police, the prosecutors, they took a look at everything and said, not really interested in pursuing it. So there has to be a reason why. Because it's an open and shut case. It's not like they say, well, there's going to be an awful lot of investigative work and an awful lot of manpower for a very small charge. No, there's no investigative work. There's no manpower. You say, is this your IP address? Yes. That's you naked? Yes. We got your voice on tape? Yes. You're arrested. So there's got to be some reason. And we're not privy to that reason. But whatever reason they decided not to file any charges, I would assume would clear the Velveteen Dream, because that's supposed to be the country we live in. It's unfortunate whether you think that's a good thing or bad. But when O.J. Simpson was found innocent, then we have to say O.J. Simpson is not guilty. You could believe he's a murderer. You got the right as an American citizen to say, well, he got away with murder. But in the eyes of the world, he is not. He did not. He was found not guilty. So to punish them in any way by saying, well, they're still a murderer, whether they got convicted or not, no. You either believe in the justice system or you don't. And if you don't, then there's no point of having a trial. You just, what do you think, folks? Guilty? Everybody raise your hands. That's not the world we live in. So I'm not sticking up for Velveteen Dream. I think he's an idiot. And if he did this, he's a double idiot. He is a double idiot. Because he had the world by the ass at one point, the wrestling world by the ass. However, if you're not charged, I don't see what the WWE's problem is. Now, I know people say, well, Enzo wasn't charged and they fired him. They fired him because he didn't report what was going on. They did not fire Enzo because they believed he was guilty. Let's get that straight. They fired Enzo because in their eyes, and I guess in their contract, if you were ever in any kind of a legal trouble, you have to immediately report it to them because they want their lawyers on it. They want a heads up before the media comes waving a microphone in their face saying, did you hear that so-and-so did such-and-such? And you're like, huh? And you're caught off guard. And it makes you look bad, and it makes your company look bad. So they want you to come to them and say, you may hear from the police, you may hear from reporters, because they're saying, I did X, Y, and Z. Enzo did not do that. Enzo covered it up and said, I can take care of this myself, and they'll never find out. Well, they did. But that's not the case with the Velveteen Dream. I don't know. Maybe they just decided, you know what, we don't like his behavior, period. Whether he's guilty or innocent, he's had some other charges about vandalizing somebody's car and doing some other things. Maybe they just said enough with this guy. I don't know. But Mike, it's a career wasted because he had a very good gimmick and a very good ring style. And truthfully, I think that he could have went pretty far in this business. I think we lost Mike.
Hello.
Yes, Mike, I guess we had a little bit of trouble there. Talking about the Velveteen Dream sort of tossing his career away here, it's a shame because, again, no charges were filed against him, and yet the WWE saw fit to cut him loose.
Right. It's sad that he had the tiger by the tail. I mean, he had the great gimmick and all that stuff, but it's like you said, I want to see the proof that he did. Yeah, he may have been talking to these girls, but I want to see the proof that he actually did what they say he did. All right. Is it out there? I haven't seen it. I don't know if I'll ever see it, but I do want to see that proof, you know? I mean, if the proof is out there, fine.
We know what we know, and unfortunately, it's not. We don't know that much. I mean, the police had to take a look at this, Mike. It's not like the police said, "I don't want to see it. Don't show me anything. I don't want to hear about it." They took a look at all this evidence, Mike. They had to. And somehow along the line, they came up with, "I'm not arresting them."
That's right. And that's sad. Now, one other thing. It's sad to see that Jessamyn Duke is gone. You kind of figured that out after that was – you kind of could figure that out that was coming after what happened on Raw Underground. You know, she got ran over in that thing, and, well, basically, you could have seen it coming. And basically, when her tag team partner goes off and has a baby with Roderick Strong, you know, that's
yeah.
What are they going to use her for?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, I thought she was pretty good. I thought she could have had a future, but this is what happens when you sign a bazillion people. Well, you're going to have to cut some of them. They're not all going to make it. Here's one that surprises me, though. Alexander Wolfe. He'd been around forever. He's a part of Imperium. Everything was going good. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, he was on TV a week ago. Not really sure where this all came from. And this is a guy that if you were going to take him off of the NXT roster, you don't think he'd fit in WWE somewhere? I think he had a better style for WWE than he did for NXT. And I think you might have got him over. So I'm really surprised at the Alexander Wolfe one. That one came out of nowhere for me. I thought they were planning a long feud with him and Killian Dane. I thought maybe then he'd go up against Imperium. There was so much that looked like that was going to be happening with Alexander Wolfe, and then they just pulled the plug on him, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said with Alexander Wolfe, the other night we saw him on TV Tuesday night, the next day, they fired him. That was like, that's weird. They just showed him on TV like a day ago, and now they got rid of him just like that?
Yeah, it is really weird. It's really weird because you're featuring him on TV. Usually if you're going to get rid of somebody, you realize you're going to do it several weeks ahead of time. You maybe give him a write-off match, and then you don't see him for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then you say, oh, well, by the way, we released him. Kind of like Velveteen Dream. I mean, when's the last time you saw Velveteen Dream? When's the last time you saw Jasmine Duke? That's sort of the way you usually handle it. This came out of nowhere. I mean, literally out of nowhere. And I don't know, Mike. I've always felt that Alexander Wolfe had some charisma and stuff. I think he would have suited the main roster better than NXT.
Well, I mean, you could have seen this coming because they took him away from Sanity. You know, they broke Sanity up, and we all thought that Sanity was going someplace, right? So, I mean, when they're doing that to him multiple times, you know, taking him away from groups, from gimmicks and groups multiple times, and you can put one and one equal two, right?
Yeah, but Imperium was having a really good run, and he was a part of them. And then they brought back, of course, Killian Dane, his ex-Sanity partner, and there was a bit of a feud or reluctant feud going on there. And I thought, well, there's a storyline ready to happen. He's with Imperium, but he doesn't necessarily want to turn his back on Killian Dane or do anything too horrible to him. He seems reluctant to allow Imperium to just, you know, gang jump him and everything. He's going along with it, but he's sort of reluctant, and I'm like, something's going to happen. We got a storyline going here. And then all of a sudden, it's now he's fired. A week after being on TV, by the way. Which, again, that doesn't happen too much. So that one does surprise me, actually. Here's something that doesn't surprise me, however. I warned everybody about Ricochet. I told you when he first came up, I said, I just There's something about this guy that screams, unless you give him the world on a silver platter, he's going to be a Karen. And now he's in hot water. Because apparently, during a discussion about the best high flyers in the world ever, which I guess a fan asked him, who's the best high flyer in the world ever? And he said, without a shadow of a doubt, me. And that led some fans to say, well, I don't know. I mean, what about, and they started naming names. One person named Io Shirai, and he said, look, Io Shirai is wonderful, 100% terrific wrestler. But I can do everything she can do, everything. And she can't do half of what I can do. So therefore, I'm better than her. And this kept up where he basically said he was better than everybody in the world. And he deleted some of this afterwards because he realized that basically he's undermining the very people he works with. So I'm going to say this. Ricochet is a great gymnast. He's very athletic, and he's certainly very flexible and very, fast. Ricochet is not a great professional wrestler. And I know that that's going to make a lot of Ricochet fans angry, so let me clarify this. For too long, you guys have been led to believe that a great professional wrestler means I can do all kinds of athletic moves, I can flippity-flop, I can do this, I can do that, I can do this and that and that and that and this, that nobody else can do. I can do a perfect super kick, and I can do a plancha, and I can do a corkscrew plancha, and I can do this and that. No. Absolutely no. That's not what makes a great professional wrestler, and it never has and it never will. What makes a great professional wrestler is the ability to draw the fans into a match to the point where everyone actually cares. It's not just look at the guy, he's athletic. You know what? See, that's the problem. You're the equivalent of the clown in the circus, not the high wire guy. See, the high wire guy, everybody watches because they're like, this is dangerous, this is whatever. And the clown, they're like, look at that guy, he can juggle. Look at that guy, he can ride a unicycle. Look at that guy, he's running away from the lion. But you're not the main event. You're the sideshow. And that's the unfortunate truth about people like Ricochet in this business, is they are the guys who you can say, look at that move, wonderful, but they're not the main event. Because at the end of the day, they can put on a good match, but they can't get people to care about them. In other words, Sheamus beating the hell out of Ricochet did nothing for Sheamus. Zero for Sheamus. Because the people who may say, I'm looking for a good reason to hate Sheamus, or I'm looking for a good reason to buy into Sheamus is very tough and hard to, beat. And they don't see that when he beats Ricochet. They go, well, okay. So you beat up a guy half your size. Okay, so you beat a guy that hasn't been used on the main roster in months. What a great champion. It doesn't help Sheamus. It may help Ricochet that he took Sheamus to the limit, but it doesn't help Sheamus. So that's also not being a good professional wrestler, because let's juxtapose this with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns, at the end of that match with Cesaro, helped Cesaro. Because at the end of that match, you're saying, with just the tiniest little fraction of luck, if Cesaro hadn't have hurt his arm, kayfabe, of course, Cesaro would be the champion. They made that perfectly clear. He couldn't hold on to his submission hold that Roman Reigns almost tapped out of anyway, because his arm was too badly injured. Had he not had that injured arm, then certainly Roman Reigns could not have muscled out of it, and he would have lost the match. That helps Cesaro. Cesaro is someone that the fans cared about whether he won or lost. Roman Reigns is a heel that a lot of people can't wait to see lose. So Cesaro helped Roman Reigns in the sense that they're saying, damn that Roman Reigns. Can't wait till somebody beats him. Roman Reigns helped Cesaro in the sense that the Cesaro fans are saying, oh, man, Cesaro should really be the champion. He really did out-wrestle Roman Reigns. We're not seeing any of that with Ricochet. Ricochet gets in there and says, watch what I can do, and then loses or wins. But it doesn't really matter whether he loses or wins because it's always the whole basis of his talent is, look what I can do, as opposed to the psychology of wrestling. And that's where I always had a problem with Ricochet. It's great that you can do these athletic moves. Now let me see you have a really good psychological wrestling match where everyone's chewing their fingernails and they're on the edge of their seat. I've never seen one from Ricochet. I didn't see one when he was Prince Puma. I saw a highly athletic acrobat, not a great professional wrestler. And that has always been my problem to a certain extent with Lucha, is that too often you're seeing acrobats, but there's not a lot of psychology. So, no, I don't think – do I think he's the greatest high flyer of all time? No. No, I don't. You ever hear a Tiger Mask? I mean, you know, if you're going to go back in your history to some of the top high flyers, my God. Yes, he's athletic. Yes, he's good. But, I mean, Mike, to sit there on a Twitter account and basically say, well, this is a good wrestler, yes. Io Shirai is good. Rey Mysterio is great. But I can do all those things. But they can't do what I do. That did not endear him to the fans. And I think that was a tragic mistake on his point.
It is a tragic mistake on his point. And frankly, I mean, she came in as being the genius of Scott. I think she's a better professional wrestler than he is. She really is.
Oh, she definitely
basically
is.
Right. She's basically evolved past that whole genius of the sky thing. Yeah, they'll refer back to it sometimes, but she basically, you know, she'll fly, but it's not a. It's not as big a part of her offense as it once was, you know. You know, at one point, it was a huge part of Io Shirai's offense. I mean, being the genius of the sky and all that stuff. But she's, like I said, evolved. And I don't know. He doesn't seem to want to evolve past this thing, you know. That's another sure example of how good a professional wrestler you can be is if you're willing to evolve past a point where you were, you know, like Io Shirai did.
Yeah, and it's a good point you're making because at some point in his career, he's going to have to change up and start doing other styles. And with his size being so diminutive, it's not going to be easy for him. The problem with Ricochet, again, and it's a problem that a lot of wrestlers are facing now who's coming up through the ranks that are smaller. And that is they're being told as long as you do some impressive moves, you don't have to be good on the mic. You don't have to get the fans to care about you because your moves will do it for you. Wrong. Wrong. It's not going to happen that way. You know what that's like saying? That's like saying, well, if you're a brilliant guitar player and you can shred that guitar, you don't need to have a good singer. You don't need to have a good band. Just get on stage and shred the guitar, and people will be like, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. No, that's not true, because there's a million people who can shred a guitar. And the band that plays after you, where the guy can only manage four chords and has nine hits, they're going to draw the audience. And you can sit backstage saying, why? I'm more talented. I can play better than him. Yeah, but he gets it. See, that's where the problem lies, okay? You got guys that can shred a guitar. I know personally musicians who can sit down with a guitar and you can't even believe their fingers could move that fast, let alone what they're playing. They ain't made $50 in their whole career. The Ramones just played bar chords. Few bar chords. You could learn that second year playing guitar, you could play, even first year, if you're good, you could play any Ramon song. They've made a zillion dollars because they got it. It's about entertainment. It's about getting the fans to come to see you. It's not about how good you are. See, that's the thing. It's about how entertaining you are. Now, it can be entertaining to watch Ricochet do his flip-flops, but then you've seen him a million times. It's like going to see a comedian and they keep telling the same joke. The first time you laugh and say, that guy was great. And then you take your friend and you laugh again and you're like, see, I told you it was great. Third time, you're like, I've heard these jokes. When's he going to come up with something new? And then the fourth time, you're like, yeah, it's not as funny as I thought it was. And pretty soon, you don't go to see the comedian anymore until he changes his jokes, right? Ricochet's never changed his jokes. He doesn't know how to. Just think back to all the greats. Triple H changed his game, didn't he? He went from the blue blood to Triple H. The Undertaker went from the dead man to the American badass, back to the dead man. He kept changing his look. Everything changing. Shawn Michaels, all the greats changed up eventually. Did different things. Ricochet's a one-trick pony. Okay, so you're really athletic, and? That's the same thing as saying, okay, you're a really good guitar player, and? Because there's a million of you. It's not enough. So I was a little disappointed hearing this tweet from Ricochet. I think it was unfounded, really. Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, about Ricochet and everything. And, you know, it's I thought at first he was a good wrestler, but now I just look at him like he's just being a moron. That's
I mean, he's a good athlete. I don't think he's a good wrestler. I never did think he was a good wrestler. I think he's a good athlete. The first few times you see him, you're like, wow, that's real impressive. But then you also have to understand this. He's 150 pounds. I know they say he's 200. And say he's not 200 pounds. If that guy's 200 pounds, then I'm 460. There's no way on God's green earth he's 200 pounds. There are guys, Luke Harper used to do outside the ring dives and everything else, and he was a legit 270. So that's a lot more impressive. Vader used to do his moonsault, and he was 300 if he was an ounce. That's a hell of a lot more impressive. Forgive me if I'm not all that impressed when very tiny guys do flip-flop moves. I'm sure you should be able to do that. Because what else are you going to do? You're going to be a power wrestler? So, of course, you learned that style. But while you're learning that style, at least learn how to draw fans in and not just be that one-trick pony all the time. I have to rely on my high-flying aerial stuff to get the fans to go ooh-ah, because they're not going to go ooh-ah forever. They're going to expect it of you. You need, like Cesaro does all the time, to keep switching things up, or you're like, okay, we've seen the Cesaro swing a million times, and then he stopped using it for a while, didn't he? And he came up with other things. Oh, we've seen him do the European uppercuts a while, and then he would do the – he changed it up, and he'd do the ones running from corner to corner to corner, or the European uppercut after he threw you in the air. He's forever changing things so it doesn't get stale. When you watch Cesaro, you say, I haven't seen that before. Haven't seen him do that. He does a few of his little greatest hits, but he mixes it up. Same thing with AJ Styles. He has some basics, and his finishers are the same. But once you'll see things, you say, I've not seen Styles do that yet. Good professional wrestlers don't have just cookie-cutter matches where you say, I'm going to do A, B, and C just like I do every single night. Because no matter how good A, B, and C is, eventually people get tired of seeing it. I remember I went to an amusement park, and there was a group of divers, and they climbed a ladder 100 feet high. Couldn't even see them. And dived into a pool that I don't believe had 8 feet of water in it. And I remember saying, well, they're going to die. There's no functional way you can dive that far. You're going to hit the bottom of the pool. But they didn't. And I was like, that's amazing. And I was super impressed. Well, they had a show every half hour. And as I'm walking around the amusement park, I hear people, oh my God, it's impressive. But after the fifth or sixth splash, I'm like, you know, it's not that all that impressive anymore. I know they can do it, and I've seen them do it. I don't necessarily want to sit and watch it again. Seen it. Well, that's the problem. It's not that that's not fantastic and amazing. It's that I don't want to see it a million times, Mike, because it gets old after a while, and you're like on to the next thing. If that's all you can do, it's not good enough.
Right, and think of it like this. When Pac first came in, Neville, when he first came in, what was his big deal? His big deal was high flying and in the Red Arrow, right?
Yes.
You know, and after, I don't know, 50, 60 times seeing that thing, it becomes least impressive. And then he comes back and starts to use the Rings of Saturn. And stuff like, he becomes more of a mat-based wrestler and starts wrestling people. Yeah, he can fly around the ring, but he changed it up. Now he only pulls out, as Pac, he only pulls out the Black Arrow when he absolutely needs it.
You're absolutely right. And let me ask you this question, which is going to be more impressive to you? Watching Ricochet hit the ropes and do a suicide dive over the top rope, knocking two or three people down. Or let's say watching Kevin Owens do it. Well, to me, it's going to be Kevin Owens because he doesn't do it that much. So when he does, you're like, oh, shit, didn't see that coming necessarily. Or if Otis did it, you'd be like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? But that's because they do it only once in a while. When you do it every time or twice a match, I'm sorry. There's nothing wrong with Ricochet technically. He's a great athlete. He hits his moves. Athletically, he's fine. Psychologically, no, not so great. Not so great. So he's the equivalent of the great athlete on a baseball team that you say, man, as a shortstop, nothing gets by him. You see these leaping catches he's making and these stopping the ball and turning those double plays. He's amazing. He's also hitting 104. And you say to yourself, well, okay, if I have a good hitting team, I guess I can afford to have him on this, but he's not the star. And if I could get a shortstop that does 80% of what he does and hit 350, who do I take? So before Ricochet goes patting himself on the back saying, I'm the greatest wrestler, you got to remember that there are guys a lot bigger in stature than you who can do some of the things you can do, and that's more impressive. Okay, so you can do everything Io Shirai does. Let me ask you this. Can you hold a belt for that long and still have the crowd upset when you lose? I bet you can't. I bet you can't. Io Shirai had the psychology behind her of the fans really wanting to see her succeed and win and keep her belt. I think with a Ricochet, Mike, it would be more like, I'm glad he won the belt, and then 3 or 4 weeks into his reign, they're like, eh, well, who's next? I don't think he has that ability to make the fans care for that long period of time like she does.
Right. I don't think so, too. I mean, look, we've talked about, you know, in some respects, yeah, she's a heavy hitter. I'm talking about Asuka, but she can fly around the ring as well. But that's not a big part of her game. I'll give you another good example of what you're talking about. On the New Orleans Saints, there's this guy named Taysom Hill. He is a great athlete, can run, can basically do everything, including sell popcorn on a football field, you know. But his main claim to fame when he was coming out was, I want to be a quarterback. Well, he couldn't throw the ball very well. He didn't have a good completion percentage. But what he could do is he could play. He's basically a jack of all trades, and he plays every position he plays really well. Now, the problem is there are wrestlers like that that are jacks of all trades that can do everything equally well. That's not Ricochet. I mean, yeah, if you had somebody, if you had, you know, you would talk about how good an idea it was to put, to make it a three-way with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns and Edge, and that was because Daniel Bryan was the moving part of that match, right? Flying all around the ring, doing what he does, and Bryan is what, you know, 210, 205, 210, something like that, you know. But he still can move around the ring. He's evolved. Daniel Bryan, when he first came in, that's what he was. He was Ricochet when he first came in. He evolved past that.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan is a complete professional wrestler. I mean, he has the psychology. He has the high flying when he needs it. He has the ground game when he needs it. He has the brawling when he needs it. He's the five-tool player. Ricochet's not. He's a one-tool player. And he's not even the best at that. He says, I'm the best high flyer ever. Well, I don't know, man. Again, go look at early Tiger Mask. Go look at some of these guys in Lucha Libre, in AAA. And also, I mean, for this that matter, how about Rey Mysterio? Because Rey Mysterio's done it for years and years and years and years and years and years. As a much heavier. He's much heavier now, much older, and still can do it. And can make the fans genuinely care about him. So you think you're on Rey Mysterio's level just because you can do the move? You know what that's like? That's like saying, well, I can sing as good as Mick Jagger. I can do anything Mick Jagger can do. I can sing those songs. Yeah, but you're not Mick Jagger. You get up there and sing it. You get booed off the stage. Well, I can sing as good as Rob Zombie. Okay, but you're not Rob Zombie. Go sing like that. You'd be booed off the stage. So you can't be that full of yourself. You got to understand. To say I'm a better high flyer than anybody, that's ludicrous. And you've just isolated a lot of people, especially your peers, who was rooting for you to do well by basically saying, well, I'm already better than you. That's outrageous. By the way, I'd take Sabu over Ricochet. Sabu might not have been quite as athletic, but let me tell you what. I seen him do some things that I was sure he was dead. Or had he not hit it perfectly, he'd have been dead. So I don't know, man. Risk-taking, high-flying, Sabu's right up there, too. So I don't know. I don't know where Ricochet's coming from. I think he's sounding a little bit bitter. I think he's sounding bitter that I get this all the time. Believe me, as a musician, I get this all the time. I get people saying, I can play guitar better than this guy. How come this guy's on, you know, TV? I don't know. Well, I can sing better than this guy. Okay, but I don't know what to tell you because they're more entertaining. That's why. It's not enough to just play your instrument well. It's not enough to just sing well. You got to be the whole package. You got to be the, you got to have the look. You got to have the attitude. You got to have the entertainment value. You have to have the songs. You have to have everything. The stage performance, you got to have it all. If you don't have it all, then you're not going to be those guys. Even if you're technically better at one thing. That's just the way it goes. I'm sure there are people in Hollywood saying, I'm a better actor than Steven Seagal. How the hell come Steven Seagal's a millionaire and I can't get a part on a toilet tissue commercial? I don't know what to tell you. Because he's more entertaining. Because he has an image. Because he has a screen presence. I don't know. Maybe you are a better actor, but hey, he's making the money. And there ain't no sense of being bitter about it. You need to take a look at these people and say, what is it that they have exactly that I don't? Well, maybe Ricochet, rather than to tweet that you're the greatest of all time, maybe you should look at guys like Shawn Michaels and Rey Mysterio and Neville and some of these other people and say, what is it that they did that made them special? Then you'll be on your way. Until then, you can just sit in your room and tell yourself, I'm better than they are. I should be on top. That doesn't help. Anyway, some bad news. Apparently, The Miz had a pretty serious knee injury. And they're saying we're looking at possibly 6 to 9 months. That's not good. That's not good. Now, the good news, if there is any, for Miz fans is you can still use The Miz. He may not be able to wrestle, but I'm sure he, after a certain amount of time, whether it be a month or whatever, he can hobble in the ring and do Miz TV. Or he can sit at the commentary booth, or he can shoot skits backstage, or he can do whatever. You could still use The Miz. And if you're smart, you will, because his strength was never really in his wrestling anyway. It was in his might. So, once again, utilize him any way you possibly can, Todd, because 9 months is a long time to just wave goodbye to him.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, 9 months towards to a year, he's going to be out with a knee injury. Well, like you said, you could do different things. You could do you could do skits. You could do commentary. You could still do Miz TV. He could be John Morrison's protege to walk him down to the ring. As like a manager.
Be his manager or something, yeah. That's what I'm thinking, sort of be his manager. They got to utilize The Miz in some way, Mike.
They really do. They can't ill afford to not use him because he's so good at what he does. I mean, he could be a face, he could be a heel. And look, I mean, this could be a godsend because it could force them to use Morrison the way he should be used.
I mean, that's true. Morrison's going to have more of a spotlight than The Miz, but you got to get The Miz around because as good as Morrison is, and again, now Morrison's a guy who's got to be in his 220, 230 pounds, and he does a lot of high-flying stuff, too. He does a lot of real impressive stuff. And he's better at the charisma thing, you know what I mean? He's better at drawing in the fans' attention than even Ricochet is. And he's not getting a spot, and I don't see him on TV saying, I have a better build than 90% of these people, and I have a better, and I have movie credits, and I have this, and I have that. He's not complaining. Only Ricochet sitting in his room crying, saying, but I'm better than they are. That's a really bad look. Really bad look. One of the last things we want to talk about is the lawsuit that was filed by former professional wrestler against Riddle for sexual harassment, really for forced sexual contact, extended to a bunch of places, the WWE and the performance. And she literally sued everybody. Everybody involved, including Riddle. Well, the judge has dropped the case against everyone except Riddle. So the judge has basically said none of these other people have anything to do with it, and suing them is frivolous, and there's no point in continuing that action. So now it's just down to her versus Riddle. But the judge did not drop that. So now it's going to be up to Riddle or her to prove or disprove these allegations. And this brings me full circle to the Velveteen Dream, in which I'm saying the Velveteen Dream was accused of sending a picture of himself to a girl who potentially was slightly underage. Riddle is accused of forcible sexual contact. I would say that's far more serious. And he's not released. He's not released at all. And the reason he's not released is he came right out and said, I didn't do it. There is a lawsuit against me. And he was forthcoming with it, and the WWE decided to stick by him. And I promise you that if a judge finds that he's guilty of this, number one, he's going to jail. He's not going to jail if maybe his lawyers will say, well, it wasn't exactly forced, it was a coerced, or it was, you know, she felt like if she didn't, her career was going to go, whatever. It was more harassment. It wasn't actual physical, like, do this or I'll kill you. It was more like, well, if you want to get ahead or you want me to help you. And it was coercion. Maybe he won't be arrested, but he'll certainly be dropped by the WWE. He will certainly be dropped by the WWE. So he better hope he didn't do it. And he better hope he can prove he didn't do it. Now, for the benefit of people who don't know about this, her allegations are that basically she was having an affair with him because he was married at the time. And she says, everyone knew I was his quote-unquote girl, and he was telling me he was going to leave his wife and all this stuff. But during some trip where there was a couple guys sleeping in the back of a car, or back of a van that they were driving, he wanted her to give him oral sex, and she said no because there were passengers in the back that could wake up or whatever, and he forced her to do it. Now, I've always been skeptical of the story because that's one thing it's very hard to force. I don't want to get too graphic on this show. We're only PG, but you know why that's hard to force.
Because if
the person really feels like they're forced, they could totally wreck your world. Okay, they could totally wreck your world. So I've always been skeptical. I've always thought to myself, yeah, but he didn't leave his wife, and now she's bitter. And I'm not a big Riddle fan, but I'm skeptical of this. But in the world we live in, it's possible that
they're going to say you used
your position to coerce her into doing things she didn't want to do. And if that comes down, Mike, he's going to lose his job.
He is going to lose a job, but as of right now, appears that it's not going to come down that way, but we have to see how the thing, you know, comes down, how the trial goes, or how the thing, I mean, right now it seems like it's like he said, she said. Now, in that matter, who are you going to believe? Who's the court going to believe? I mean, we've talked about this whole situation before in terms of did she or did she not say yes to a certain thing. Now,
right.
Yeah, he might have tried to force her, and he all said, but, okay, do this, this, and this. And she said, it sounded like she said yes to it. Consensually, maybe because she wanted to get out of the car anyway, you know. So I just don't know.
It's going to be very hard to prove, and we might run a little over time, but it's going to be very hard to prove, and here's why, Mike. She had consensual sex with him many, many, many times, apparently. So what she's basically saying, and I know that you can have consensual sex with someone a million times, and when they say no and you still do it, it's still rape. I get it. But what I'm saying is this. It's going to be very hard to prove that this one particular time, she didn't particularly want to do this, but did it anyway because she was scared. Well, what are you scared of? Scared of what? Have you not done this before? Did any harm come to you? Did he threaten you in the past, or did you willingly do it? It's going to be very hard to prove you were scared of this guy. It's going to be very hard to prove that. Because what it sounds more like is, why don't we do this? No, I'd be embarrassed if somebody woke up and seen this. This would be a horror show for me, and I'd... Oh, come, they're not going to wake up. No, I don't really want to. Come on. No, I don't. Come on. Oh, all right. And then, by the way, did you leave your wife today? No. Okay, well, then you just forced me to do something I didn't want to do. That's sort of what it sounds like. I'm sorry. Now, if evidence comes out to the contrary, then by all means, he should fry. But I'm just not seeing it. I'm not seeing any evidence of this. I'm just not. So she's going to have to come up with something. She's going to have to come up with, the second I got to my hotel room, I wrote my girlfriend and said, I was just violated. I was just forced to do something against my will. Or a message to him saying, why did you do that? I never want to see you again, blah, blah. That's evidence that might change my mind. But if you say, well, no, everything went smashingly for a month until she found out he wasn't going to leave his wife, and then all of a sudden it was forced, I ain't buying that. Sorry. So I think really the odds are on Matt Riddle's side. And by the way, just for the record, he has clearly stated, told my wife all about it. They worked out their problems. He has apologized to her, apparently, and he said, under no circumstances did I ever force her to do anything, period, end of conversation. So he's very confident that he can prove that, I guess. And I got a newsflash. I just told you how she can prove that he's a liar and an abuser. Now I'll tell you how he can prove otherwise. If he has one message from her after this incident saying, when are you going to come pick me up again? When are you going to see me? Are we going to get together? She's done. She's done. Because I got a newsflash for you. Nobody in their right mind, if they felt they were forced to do something against their will and had such a traumatic experience, would ever go near that person again. For any reason. So, Mike, I think if he has that, then this case is done.
Right. If he had that, then this case is done. And look, let's kind of equate this to what happened with Enzo. Yeah, throw up the drug situation right there. Enzo was caught in a room. Yeah, he was caught in a room with drugs, but there was a lady there, and then obviously we now know that she's a ring rat or close to it. You know, if people know, no, people don't know what that means, then go look it up, you know. And she was claiming, and she claimed rape as well. But then again, we saw what happened with that and how you could prove that it wasn't, because she's going around texting her friends and doing this and saying, look who I'm with and look who I'm with and all that.
Right.
I think that's probably where we're headed, Marcus, is that if she says, she makes these allegations and he's got like you said, he's got a text or an email or something that he can just bring out, there you go, you know?
Yeah, it's... You know, you got to be so careful, because there's going to be people saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter. Even if it was his wife and she said no and he still did it, then he raped her. I get that. I get that a girl can say yes a million times and the million and one time then she says no and you don't stop, you raped her. I get it. And I agree with you. But don't you tell me that it's never happened in the history of mankind that a woman is having an affair with a man who keeps saying, I'm going to leave my wife, I'm going to leave my wife, and you say, that's cool, that's cool, that's cool, and you believe him. And then when you realize, he ain't leaving his wife, I'm just a side piece. And then you get angry and say, well, and I'm going to say that you forced me to do something. That's happened too. Oh, that's happened too. And if you say that hasn't happened, then you are being disingenuous and you're lying to yourself, because that has happened. And I don't know which is true. I'm not making a judgment. I'm just telling you, if she has text messages to her friend saying, as long as I've known him, I've never seen him this way. He forced me to do something I didn't want to do. I never want to see him again. I'm in tears. He's done. He's done. All she has to do is produce a message either to one of her friends or to him. Her saying, why did you do that? I never want to see you again. He's done. But if he has messages saying, hey, hon, when are we going to see each other again, blah, 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 she's done. She's done. So it's going to come right down to that. And he seems really, really super confident. So I think he might have it. There are other people in this business who said, look, she was not forced. She was at every single one of these events. We knew they were together. They drove together. They went together. She, even after this supposed incident, she still was with him. We have pictures of her in the car, taking a selfie of her kissing him. If that's true, she's done. She's a woman spurned, and she tried to get some revenge. I'm not saying that's the truth. I'm just saying that that would be her Waterloo, and his Waterloo is if she has the opposite, and we see her being traumatized or in any way, shape, or form writing him saying that what he did was wrong or something, Mike, then he's done. Well, I think we've lost everybody, but anyway, folks, that wraps it up.
Well, we can wrap up. We will see you soon.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.